an awful lot in that reading, and it repeated so much of what we have already done through previous readings and all the distances they've travelled. So I'm going to take my message today from the Kedavah HaShalakim from Messianic Jews. So let us pray first. Abba Father, we thank you and praise you that you give us the word each week to teach your people, to show them how to enjoy your Torah, how to live according to your word. And Abba, we just give this time to you and ask that your kingdom purpose will be outworked, that the message will be received and they will take what they want and leave the rest. Abba, we just give this to you in Yeshua's name. Amen. So as I said, I'm going to speak from both Messianic Jews and also from Ephesians, because Ephesians is like the Messianic version of the book of Yehoshua, and there's a bit good comparison between the two. So that's what I'm planning on doing today. I've titled it Yeshua, our Moshe and Yehoshua. They were both typologies of Yeshua, leading us into a resurrection life. And that's what we're all aiming for. So from Messianic Jews, Hebrews chapter 3, verses 16 to verse 4, verse 2, which we've just read, but I'll read it again. Who said, who were the people who, after they heard, quarrelled so bitterly as those whom Moshe brought out of Egypt? And with whom was Yehovah disgusted for 40 years? Those who sinned. Yes, they fell dead in the wilderness. And to whom it was it that he swore that they would not enter his rest? Those who were disobedient. So we see that they were unable to enter because of lack of trust or lack of faith. Therefore, let us be terrified of the possibility that even though the promise of entering his rest remains, any one of you might be judged to have fallen short of it. For the good news has also been proclaimed to us, just as it was to them. But the message they heard, they didn't do them any good, because those who heard it did not combine it with trust or faith. And Ephesians 4:29-30, it says, let no harmful language come from your mouth, only good words that are helping in meeting the need, words that will benefit those who hear them, and don't cause grief to Yehovah's Ruach HaKodesh, for he has stamped you as his property until the day of final redemption. As Yehovah's leader to the promised land, Moshe was grieved by doubters who could not enter the land. The Ruach of Yehovah can be grieved today as he leads us into all truth. I believe he was grieved with all that talking during praise and worship today. My spirit felt it and I had to walk out. And he does grieve when we don't obey his word or worship him in spirit and in truth as he wants us to. As Yehovah's leader to the promised land, Moshe was grieved by doubters who could not enter that land. The Ruach HaKodesh can be grieved today as he leads us into all truth. I don't know whether you feel the spirit of grief within you, but I know I do. And it hits me right in the center of my stomach. And I know, like I know, like I know, that it's Yah's grieving, it's not me. There will always be so many analogies to the Messianic community that we can derive from the Exodus journey. It is one of the most perfect Tanakh pictures as the purpose of the Messianic community is in the entire of all the scriptures. One prominent note we are intended to understand is that the life as a believer in Yeshua HaMashiach is supposed to be a life of victory and of spiritual or ruachal conquest. Not just conquest, such as revival over sin in our community, seeing souls come in to the King community, but conquest in our own lives, as well as where circumstances do not rule us, as we know from Yochanan 8 and verse 36, which says, So if the Son frees you, you will be really free. Things, roadblocks are put in our life for a reason. I've had a roadblock put in my life this week. Many of you have had roadblocks in your life this week. And we know that if we keep our faith and trust in Yah, we will overcome. He's in control. We just have to give it to him, let go, and let him take over. We can't do any more than that apart from praying, of which we all do, I'm sure, every day. As Jehovah set Israel free from Egypt, he sets us free from any power of the adversary or the devil that can send against us. Now, I love the word devil because what's in the middle of it? Take the D off and you've got evil. It really speaks about what he is. As you know, the Exodus story, of course, begins with Abraham, because the land of Canaan, towards which Jehovah led Israel out of Egypt, was the very land that Jehovah took Abraham into and gave it to him. This is why they couldn't touch any of the land that was given to Lot during our message, because Lot was Abraham's nephew. Compare this thought of Abraham's promise and our own thoughts through Bereshit or Genesis chapter 13, verses 14 to 17. Jehovah said to Abraham, after Lot had moved away from him, "Look around you from where you are, to the north, the south, the east, and the west. All the land you see I will give to you and your descendants forever. I will make your descendants as numerous as the specks of dust on the earth, so that if a person can count the specks of dust on the earth, then your descendants can be counted. Get up and walk through the length and breadth of the land, because I will give it to you. I will give it to you." And then we're going on to Ephesians 3, 14 to 21. And it says, "For this reason I fall on my knees before the Father, whom every family in heaven and on earth receives its character. I pray that from the treasures of his glory, he will empower you with inner strength by his Ruach, so that the Messiah may live in your hearts through trusting or through faith. Also, I pray that you will be rooted and founded in love, so that you, with the Jehovah's people, will be given strength to grasp the breadth, length, height, and depth of the Messiah's love. Yes, to know it, even though it is beyond all knowing, so that you will be filled with the fullness of Jehovah. Now to him, by his power working in us, is able to do far beyond anything we can imagine or ask or imagine. To him be glory in the Messianic community and in Yeshua HaMashiach from generation to generation forever. Amen." Between the time of Abraham was given the land and the time that Israel entered into it to dwell in it, the people became enslaved in Mitzrayim or Egypt. They left the land of Israel during the son of Yitzhak's days. The famine occurred after Yosef had been sold into Mitzrayim. And notice it was an issue of food that caused Israel to lose the land and become bound in Egypt. Just the same as Adam. Adam, of course, was in the land, the Holy Land, so to speak, when Jehovah promised him dominion and power over the earth. But the enemy got his hands into the situation and managed to bring Adam down from this place of power through the food of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Mankind lost his home in the garden. He lost the life Jehovah had in the tree of life also. He could have eaten from that tree, but he chose to eat from the tree he was told not to eat from. He fell down into a life of sin and submission to the evil one. And Jehovah's entire gospel plan is to restore us out of sin and bring us back to the place where we have life in our lives, Jehovah's life, his dominion, that man was created to be dominant. And we were supposed to have dominion over all things. And that was lost through Adam. And just as Yah restored the people to the land of Canaan, and the wicked enemy tribes of people inhabited the land, giving rise to the need of casting them out, the spiritual realm in this world where we are intended to reign, there are devils and adversaries as Hasatan rules this world. But we can drive them out. And we can do this through prayer and study of his word. In an unlearned position, it might initially sound cruel for Yahweh to throw out the inhabitants of Canaan, just so that Israel can have their land back. Unless we presume that since Israel lost the land and other peoples grabbed it, making it unfair to simply drive them out, we need to understand that what these people were like in the land. Yahweh would never have thrown them out if he liked them there. Listen to the sort of reasons Yahweh would have Israel driving the inhabitants out of Canaan. In Vayikra, Leviticus chapter 18, verses 6 to 7, it says, "None of you is to approach anyone who is a close relative in order to have sexual relations. I am Yahweh. You are not to have sexual relations with your father. You are not to have sexual relations with your mother. She is your mother. Do not have sexual relations with her." And verses 22 to 24, it says, "You are not to go to bed with a man as with a woman. It is an abomination. You are not to have sexual relations with any kind of animal and thus become unclean with it. Nor is any woman to present herself to a woman to have sexual relations with it. It is perversion. Do not make yourselves unclean by any of these things, because all the nations which I am expelling out ahead of you are defiled with them." That's why they were being tossed out, because they were living like they're trying to push on us in this world today. In Vayikra 18:27-30, it says, "For the people of the land have committed all these abominations, and the land is defiled. If you make the land unclean, it will vomit you out too, just as it is vomiting out the nation that was there before you. For those who engage in any of these disgusting practices, whoever they may be, will be cut off from their people. So keep my charge not to follow any of these abominable customs and others before you have followed, and thus defile yourselves by doing them. I am Yahweh, your Elohim." And in Vayikra chapter 20, verse 9, it says, "A person who curses his father or mother must be put to death. Having cursed his father or mother, his blood is on him. And verses 22 and 24 of the same chapter, it says, "You are to observe all my regulations and rulings and act on them, so that the land to which I am bringing you will not vomit you out. Do not live by the regulations of the nations which I am expelling ahead of you, because they did all these things, which is why I detested them. But to you I have said, you will inherit their land. I will give it to you as a possession, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am Yahweh, your Elohim, who has set you apart from other peoples." And Vayikra 20:26 says, "Rather you people are to be holy for me, because I, Yahweh, am holy. I have set you apart from other peoples so that you can belong to me." These people were extremely wicked. In fact, Yah threw them out of the land because of their wickedness. And I see very little difference between them and the current world we are living in today. Ours could even be worse with the introduction of AI cameras, surveillance, shadow banning, and the introduction of bills in Parliament to monitor our speech. Not their speech. The parliamentarians can say what they want, but they will monitor us. The enemy has definitely come into this great Southland of the Ruach HaKodesh, and he has to be cast out. Yahweh gave the land to Abraham, and just as in Adam's case, the enemy snuck in and messed it up, causing them all to leave, and he moved in and ransacked the goodness out of the land. But Yah bringing his people back to power, it's the time for battle now. It's the time for warfare, spiritual warfare. Let's push hell out of our cities, no matter where we live on this earth, no matter where we are listening to this message, and on our homes or wherever we are. As Israel came towards Canaan, under the leadership of Moshe, they spent 40 years spying out to see what was awaiting them. Yeshua came into this world both as Moshe and Yehoshua. Moshe led Israel to the borders, but Yehoshua led them into the land and conquered it. As Moshe led them to Mount Sinai and gave them the 10 mitzvot, or words, Yeshua led a multitude to another mountain. In Shemot, Exodus chapter 7, 12, verses 37 to 38, it says, the people of Israel traveled from Raamses to Sukkot, some 600,000 men on foot, not counting children. A mixed crowd also went up with them, as well as livestock in large numbers, both flocks and herds. And in chapter 19, verse 3 to 5, it says, Moshe went up to Elohim, and Yehovah called him to the mountain. And here is what you are to say to the household of Yaakov, to tell the people of Israel. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you will pay careful attention to what I say and keep my covenant, then you will be my own treasure from among the peoples, and all the earth is mine. Matityahu, Matthew chapter 4 and verse 25 to 5 verse 3 says, a huge crowd follow him, that is Yeshua, from the Galilee, the 10 towns, Jerusalem, Yehuda, and Avea Hayaden. Seeing the crowds, Yeshua walked up the hill and he sat down. His Talmudim came to him and he began to speak. This is what he taught them. How blessed are the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Yeshua gave them what is called the Beatitudes. To me, it says the attitude we have to behave in. It's deeper than Moshe's mitzvot. These words regarded the state of the heart, and they must be fulfilled physically. The mitzvot, or 10 words of Moshe, were more outward oriented. Do not kill, do not commit adultery, etc. The mitzvot of Moshe, of Yeshua, were statements of the heart and were literal commandments. It's very important that we understand that Yeshua did not say, you do not or you shall not, but rather he used a more positive note with how blessed are the poor in spirit. In other words, we are told to make ourselves not to do anything to be saved. We don't have to do a thing. He did not say, you shall be poor in spirit. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are poor in the Ruach. Why? The difference is major. Moshe commands said that you have to do such and such to live through his commands. We need Yehovah to change us. He changes us, and the result is a people who are. For that reason, he says, blessed are the people who needs such and such or do such and such. And he goes on through all the Beatitudes. Blessed are, blessed are, blessed are. When we are changed, we have the attitudes found in the Beatitudes. It's the attitude in which we must be to other people. Moshe told them these laws so they would live in those manners in the land. In Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1, it says, now this is the mitzvah, the laws and rulings, which Yehovah your Elohim ordered me to teach you, for you to obey in the land you are crossing over to possess. You will notice as we go through the book of Devarim that it's going to repeat a lot of the instructions we were given earlier in the Torah. In Devarim, which literally means readings, Moshe rehearsed the laws all over again, a second time before Yehovah took him away. In Matityahu chapter 5, Yeshua gave the attitudes of the heart which we were to emulate. And then we read in Acts chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Until a day then after giving instructions through the Ruach HaKodesh to the emissaries whom he had chosen, he was taken up into heaven. After his death, he showed himself to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. During a period of 40 days, they saw him and he spoke with him about the kingdom of Elohim. They were instructed of what was going to happen in the kingdom of Elohim, which hadn't been given to anybody else at any other time. Notice the 40-day period. It reminds us of the 40 years that Israel was at the borders of Canaan and spied out the land where the kingdom of Israel would stand. Yeshua would be taken up just like Moshe. And like Moshe, Yeshua went over the things he had taught them in the kingdom of Yehovah. The Talmudim, or the disciples, were about to enter a very special and blessed promised land beyond anything Israel or the Exodus would enter. This was the kingdom of Yehovah that is within you. In Luke chapter 17, verses 20 to 21, it says, the Parashim asked Yeshua when the kingdom of Elohim would come. The kingdom of Elohim, he answered, does not come with visible signs, nor will people be able to say, look, it is here or over there, because you see, the kingdom of Elohim is among you or within you. The kingdom of Elohim is in this room because we are all Elohim-loving people. In Luke chapter 17, verses 20 to 21, Endeavor in Deuteronomy 34 and verse 1, Moshe ascended from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the summit of Pisgah across from Jericho. There Yehovah showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan. And in Devarim 34, 5 to 7, it says, so Moshe, the servant of Yehovah, died there in the land of Moab, as Yehovah said. He was buried in the valley across from Beit Peor in the land of Moab. But to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Moshe was 120 years old when he died, with eyes undimmed and vigor undiminished. 40 years left I've got. 120, strong as I am today. In Matityahu chapter 28, verse 16, he said, so the 11 Talmudim went to the hill in the Galil where Yeshua had told them to go. And in Mark 16, 19, it says, so then after he had spoken with them, Ha'adon Yeshua was taken up into heaven and sat at the right hand of Yehovah. But Moshe left the job of entering into the promised land to Yehoshua, to actually lead the people into the kingdom. Yeshua, as I said earlier, was both Moshe and Yehoshua. Some people today even claim that Yeshua's name is Yehoshua, and they call him Yehoshua. But he was always known during his life on earth as Yeshua, never as Yehoshua. But Yehoshua is a type of Yeshua. In Yochanan chapter 14 and verse 26, it says, but the counselor, the Ruach HaKodesh, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything. That is, he will remind you of everything I have said to you. And in Yochanan 14, 15 to 18, it says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. I will ask the Father, and he will give you another comforting counselor like me, the Spirit of Truth, to be with you forever. The world cannot deceive him, because it neither sees nor knows him. You know him, because he is staying with you and will be united with you. I will not leave you orphans. I am coming to you. In Yochanan 16 and verse 13, it says, "However, when the Ruach of truth comes, he will guide you into all truth, for he will not speak of his own initiative, but will only say what he hears. He will announce to you the events of the future." Yeshua is the Word. The Parashah is named Devarim, words plural. And Yeshua is the Word. So therefore the Ruach can only speak the words he hears from Yeshua. Yeshua said he will give another comforting counselor like me. Then he turns around and says, "I will not leave you orphans, I am coming to you." He would send the comforter, and then he will come, and he will not leave us comfortless. The Ruach HaKodesh is the Ruach, or the spirit form of Yeshua, leading us into the spiritual land of all truth, just as Yehoshua led the people, the children of Israel, into Canaan. When Moshe had them spy out the land, they were to see the proof that it was flowing with milk and honey. In Bamidbar Numbers, in chapter 13, verse 27, it says, "What they told him was this: we entered the land where you sent us, and indeed it does flow with milk and honey. Here's its fruit." There was proof. So they were given the proof of the land's blessings. It was fruit from the land. But Yeshua gave us proof of the nature of our land. Then this is so important for you to understand. Our land is not a piece of real estate. Our real estate is not a piece of land. Look at what Yeshua gave them proof for during those 40 days speaking of the kingdom. In Acts chapter 1, verses 1 to 3, says, "Dear Theophilus, in the first book I wrote you about everything Yeshua set out to do and teach, until the day when, after giving instructions through the Ruach HaKodesh to the emissaries whom he had chosen, he was taken up into heaven. After his death, he showed himself to them and gave them many convincing proofs that he was alive. During a period of 40 days they saw him, and he spoke with them about the kingdom of Yehovah." The 40 days in which he was speaking to them about the kingdom of Yehovah, as I said, just as Israel spent 40 days in the kingdom and the land of, before reaching the land of Canaan, proved he was alive after his crucifixion, or his dying on the stake. So he proved he had resurrected. He proved he was alive. When Israel saw the proof of the land they would enter, the Talmudim saw the proof of the sort of spiritual land they were about to enter. Our promised land is Yeshua's resurrection. The children of Israel had newness of actual land, with milk and honey, rather than whipped back and mud pits of Mitzrayim. But in Romans 6, verses 4 to 6, it says, "Through immersion into his death, we are buried with him," that is Yeshua. "And just as through the glory of the Father, Messiah was raised from the dead, likewise we too might live a new life. For if we have been united with him in a death like his, we will also be united with him in a resurrection like his. We know that our old self was put to death on the execution stake with him, so that the entire body of our sinful propensities might be destroyed and we might no longer be enslaved to sin." We walk in newness of life. This is Yeshua's resurrection. Our promised land is a blessed life. And so many believers are thinking what you might be thinking. "I'm saved, I obeyed Acts 22:38, I got immersed, I'm supposedly resurrected with Yeshua HaMashiach. Why is the devil giving me so many problems?" The answer is because there are enemies in this land. Hasatan is attacking, and he attacks us through our children as well. enemies are strewn throughout the promised land of Canaan. In Bamidbar Numbers 13:27-29, it says, what they were told was this: we entered the land where you sent us, and indeed it does flow with milk and honey. Here's its fruit. However, the people living in the land are fierce, and the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the Anakim there. Amalek lives in the area of the Negev. The Hitti, the Yavusi, the Emori live in the hills. And the Canaanite live by the sea and along by the Yarden. Anybody but the Amalekite. And the Hitti, anybody but the Hitti. Oh, and the Yavusi, oh no, anybody but the Yavusi. The Amori, no, anyone but the Amori. And the Canaanite live by the sea and alongside the Yarden. They weren't prepared to go in because of these people. They didn't trust Yah enough with all he'd done. Just like Canaan, this land Yehovah gave us has enemies scattered in it, who grabbed it on the day that Adam was kicked out of Gan Eden. And we have to drive them out of this land as well. Yes, we are resurrected with Yeshua HaMashiach, but there is sin in this world like never before. And these pressures of today don't help, but we need to stand up like Kalev and Yehoshua did. In Bamidbar Numbers chapter 30 and verses 30 to 31, it says, Kalev silenced the people around Moshe and said, we ought to go up immediately and take possession of it. There is no question that we can conquer it. The men who had gone with him said, we can't attack those people because they are stronger than we are. And as Caleb said, we can conquer it, we can conquer this land that we live in today. Just as Yehovah told Israel, the land is yours to possess. In Bamidbar Numbers 33:53, it says, drive out the inhabitants of the land and live in it, for I have given the land to you to possess. They could have taken it without that 40 years of wandering. Ephesians chapter 1 says, we are blessed in certain places. In Ephesians 1 and verse 3, it says, praise be Yehovah, the Father of our Lord Yeshua HaMashiach, who in the Messiah has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in heaven. Those heavenly places are ours, along with everything in them. And Yehovah raised up Yeshua to sit in those heavenly places. Ephesians 1 and verse 20 says, when he worked in the Messiah to raise him from the dead and seat him at his right hand in heaven. And it's for you too. Ephesians 2 verses 5 and 6. That even when we are dead because of our acts of disobedience, he brought us to a life along with the Messiah. It is by grace that you have been delivered. And that is, Yehovah raised us up with Yeshua HaMashiach and seated us with him in heaven. By grace we are saved. It's nothing we can do. It's only by grace. And Ephesians chapter 3 used words similar to those given to Abraham. Ephesians 3 verses 17 to 20 says, so that the Messiah may live in your hearts through your trusting or your faith, also I pray that you'll be rooted and founded in love, so that you, with all Yehovah's people, will be given strength to grasp the breadth, length, height and depth of the Messiah's love. Yes, to know it, and even though it is beyond all knowing, so that you will be filled with all the fullness of Yehovah. Now to him who by his power working in us is able to do far beyond anything that we can ask or imagine. Yehovah can go beyond what you ever imagine. Why does it say according to the power that is in us? It is because we have to go into our land and possess it. So Yehovah has power in us to succeed. So while Israel could not believe Yehovah to give them victory over the things they did, to consider they could take care of the things they did consider and beyond what they could imagine, if Yehovah can do wonders beyond your wildest dreams, then the enemies beyond your dreams can be dealt with as well. You think you do see and realize it's beyond your victory, but Yehovah is saying your victory, power working in you, is beyond what you can realize. We're shortchanging ourselves too much. Our doubts are killing the kind of lives we can be living right now. Instead of being defeated, and do not start thinking right here and now, while I talk about these things of all the supposedly good reasons why you are defeated, you are killing your victory before I even finish my sentence. Then chapter 4 speaks of the land of all truth, a land where we are spiritually strong. In Ephesians 4:13-15, it says, until we all arrive at the unity implied by trusting and knowing the Son of Yehovah at full manhood, at the standard of maturity set by the Messiah's perfection, we will then no longer be infants tossed about by the waves and blown along by every wind of teaching, at the mercy of people clever in devising ways to deceive. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in every respect grow up into him who is the head, the Messiah. Recall the heavenly placings are our, and blessings are ours. Just like Israel was given the land before they have even entered into it, recall that Yeshua is seated in those heavenly places. Recall that we are seated with him in heavenly places. And that is like saying the land is ours before we've entered it. So let's enjoy it. There is something in Ephesians 6 that you need to know about these heavenly places, though, which might give you a bit of a shock. In Ephesians 6 and verse 12, it says, we are not struggling against human beings, against rulers, authorities, and cosmic powers governing this darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm. The evil forces are everywhere, not just on this earth. They are in the heavenly realm, and we learn in Revelation how the evil one, the dragon, is cast out. We just read against the spiritual forces in the heavenly realm, that is in our land. Yes, that is what the word says. There are spiritual forces in the heavenly realm. And this is where Satan fell from. It's where the dragon will fall from. Ephesians 1 and verse 3 says, this is our land. Ephesians says, praise be Yehovah, Father of our Lord Yeshua HaMashiach, who in the Messiah has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in heaven. Ephesians, as I said, is the Ketuvah HaShalachim book of Yehoshua. Like Israel, we fight the devil and the evil adversaries out of the heavenly places we are meant to enjoy. Israel's goal was to have a city bearing his name smack dab in the middle of his enemy-infested land of Canaan. So many people are trying to convince themselves that they can live on the fringes and make no waves and leave the devil alone so he'll leave them alone, so they can think they're doing fine living in defeat. But that's not the way it works. You need to get back up there to that heavenly place. Whatever excuse you use to say you are not serving Yehovah properly is actually an enemy who sits in that heavenly place instead of you. With all our arguments, the bottom line is that we are not where we could be. And I stress could be. Israel could have taken that land after those 40 days of spying. The only reason they did not was because they did not believe Yehovah. It is nobody's fault but their own disbelief. We need faith. In other words, we do not have to see in order to believe. We must not have to go by what we do see, but believe in spite of what we do see. There is wickedness in high places, and we are supposed to be enjoying those high places. Do not settle for just I'm a lukewarm, defeated believer. It's your life. You have to live it to enjoy it. Change things. Get stirred up about not enjoying your life and change it. All the provision has been made for you. Don't waste it away like the older Hebrews did because of some lie you believe that you cannot enjoy that sort of life now. This is the rest that you need. This is the day of rest you need that you can be living daily. The Ruach HaKodesh is called the Comforter because he will guide you into the rest of this real promised land. As we said in the beginning, in Messianic Jews 3, chapter 17, verses 4 to 2, with whom was Jehovah disgusted for 40 years? Those who sinned. Yes, they fell dead in the wilderness. And to whom was it that he swore that they would not enter his rest? Those who were disobedient. So we see that they were unable to enter because of lack of trust. Therefore, let us be terrified of the possibility that even though the promise of entering his rest remains, any one of you might be judged to have fallen short of it. For good news has been proclaimed to us, just as it was to them. But the message they heard didn't do them any good, because those who heard it did not combine it with trust. Moshe grieved with the people that a lie that could not enter. I'll say that again. Moshe grieved with the people who believed a lie that they could not enter when Jehovah's word said they could enter. Those 40 years of grief occurred after they doubted Jehovah. The 40 days spying in doubt awarded them 40 years in wandering. Some believers just wander. There is no direction. There's no purpose to conquer. And they grieve others around them. If Yeshua is our Moshe and our Yehoshua, then as Moshe was grieved, we can grieve Yeshua. And look at what the Ephesians, the Ketuvah HaShelekim book of Yehoshua says. Think of Moshe being grieved as he was intended to lead them into the land. In Ephesians 4, 29 and verse 30, it says, let no harmful language come from your mouth, only good works that are helpful in meeting the need, words that will benefit those who hear them. Don't cause grief to Yehovah's Ruach HaKodesh, for he has stamped you as his property until the day of final redemption. Resurrection life is our Canaan. It is Yeshua's resurrection life. And believe me, that is a victorious life. So we have to get in there and enjoy it, and enjoy our life with Yehovah. The 10 doubters spread corruption and corrupt communication to others and defiled them with unbelief. This can happen with us today. When we doubt, we cannot live in victory and complain about our problems in corrupt words of unbelief. We cannot enjoy Yehovah when we cannot enjoy our resurrection life. Yehovah, through his Son, Yeshua HaMashiach, is the resurrection and he is the life. You know, things happen in our lives and no mother, father wants to see a child go before they do. And things happen where with our children, they suffer and we hurt. The problem is that many of us then give up and not do anything about it. What we have to make sure is that when things happen in your life, yes, they happen. Yes, you grieve for your children when things happen to them that should you don't want to happen. But that doesn't mean that you can't pray for them. That doesn't mean you can't give them words of comfort. That doesn't mean that you don't take it on yourself and make it a problem for yourself. Because when you live a resurrection life, you are with them, you respect their decisions, you respect the processes they want to take in their lives, but you let go and you let Yah take control. That way it doesn't matter what happens, you know that you've given it to Yah and he's in control and you are completing your resurrection life with no fear, no worries, because Yah is in control. And this is one of the biggest problems in life, is being able to let go and let Yah. It's something that's learned through the school of hard knocks. It's not learned by living an enriched lifestyle. But we do get there and we do live it. So can I encourage you, no matter what you are going through, And many people are going through a lot of things, whether it's with their parents, whether it's with their children, and what's happening in their own lives at the moment. Trust in Yah. Be obedient to his word. Let go, let him take control, and live your resurrection life to the fullest. Any questions? Now we'll go on to the remembrance service.